From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Antifa government protests continued across Iran Sunday for a fourth day, with President Hassan Rouhani appealing for calm while acknowledging that people have a right to protest and criticize authorities. In his first public remarks on the unrest, Mr. Rouhani warned the government will show no tolerance for damage to public property or violating public order. U.S. Senator Lindsey Graham was asked about the unrest on the CBS program Face the Nation Sunday.
Well, it tells us that the Obama approach of relieving sanctions, hoping the regime would moderate, has failed. The people are not getting the benefit of sanctions relief. They're more upset with their oppressors than ever. The money from sanction relief has gone into rebuilding the Iranian military, and they're destabilizing the Mideast.
Graham said President Donald Trump should use the opportunity to call for a better nuclear deal with Iran. Tens of thousands have taken to the streets since Thursday in the capital, Tehran, and several other cities over the state of the economy and opposition to corruption. Some protests have been violent, with at least two deaths reported. Hundreds have been arrested. They're seen as the most serious domestic unrest since the disputed re-election of President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad in 2009. At least eight people were killed Sunday in protests in Democratic Republic of Congo over President Joseph Kabila's refusal to step down at least until elections are held next year. Protester Jean Chrétien said even during the Mobutu dictatorship, people could march peacefully. He said the people are tired of Kabila. A UN peacekeeping spokeswoman said at least seven were killed in the capital, Kinshasa, one in Kananga, dozens arrested. Last year, Mr. Kabila committed to an election in 2017, but the government has pushed that back to next December. This is VOA News. People worldwide rang in the new year with fireworks and other forms of celebration. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres issued a red alert for a world, he said, is divided by inequality, nationalism, and xenophobia. He said conflicts have deepened and the threat of nuclear war is greater now than at any time since the end of the Cold War.
When I took office 1 year ago, I appealed for 2017 to be a year for peace. Unfortunately, in fundamental ways, the world has gone in reverse.
The UN chief said climate change is moving faster than we are, and he spoke of horrific violations of human rights. And the UN chief appealed for unity to overcome these challenges.
Liebe Mitbürgerinnen und Mitbürger,
in another New Year's Eve address, German Chancellor Angela Merkel, who emerged politically weakened from September elections, said many Germans are rightfully concerned about the country's cohesion. She acknowledged differences of opinion are stark. Pope Francis said 2017 was marred by war, lies, and injustice, and urged people to take responsibility for their actions. China's President Xi Jinping pledged to continue reform and opening up the country while backing the UN and contributing to global development and order. In his highly anticipated New Year's Day address, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un said the U.S. will never attack his country because he now has the capability of hitting the U.S. mainland with nuclear weapons. Kim also vowed to mass-produce nuclear warheads, but said weapons would only be used if the North's security is threatened. He also said the path to dialogue is open and considered sending a delegation to the Winter Olympic Games in South Korea. Sung-Yoon Lee is a Korea Studies Associate Professor in Korean Studies at Tufts University.
The timing is optimal for North Korea to make this show of peace offensive that would give wind to the Moon administration, also to China and Russia, in calling on the United States to back off a little bit. No more rhetorical escalation, no more big-scale combined military exercises with South Korea for the time being. In a word, to make concessions.
North Korea, the object of tightening UN sanctions, launched several missile tests last year and detonated a sixth nuclear device. Nearly 40 people died early Sunday in a head-on collision between a truck and bus in central Kenya. Some 3,000 people die on Kenyan roads each year. In Costa Rica, two pilots and 10 American tourists died in a plane crash Sunday in the popular mountainous Punta Islita area along the Pacific coast. In Afghanistan, an apparent suicide bombing at a funeral of a former district governor in the eastern city Jalalabad Sunday killed at least 17 and wounded several. In suburban Denver, Colorado, at least one policeman was killed, five wounded, in an apparent ambush by a lone gunman who was also killed. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Morning Africa and a Happy New Year to all our listeners of the continent and around the world. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, and today's Monday, January the 1st, 2018. And as we start the new year, here are some of the stories we are covering for you. In his New Year message, the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres warns that the world is likely to face many complex and new dangers in 2018.
Conflicts have deepened and new dangers have emerged. Global anxieties about nuclear weapons are the highest since the Cold War. And climate change is moving faster than we are. Inequalities are growing and we see horrific violations of human rights.
The UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, in his New Year message, at least two civilians have been killed as violence erupted ahead of protests in the Democratic Republic of Congo on Sunday. And as we begin a new year, Africans around the continent are expressing both a sense of cautious optimism and frustration for what they see as leaders who are refusing to relinquish power, many using seemingly unconstitutional maneuvers.
My hope is African leaders to accept willingly to leave power.
A listener in Uganda expresses his hopes for the African continent for the year 2018. Those stories plus sports are coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. We start off in the DRC, where at least two civilians are said to have been killed on Sunday when police fired shots and tear gas to break up a Catholic mass. Police arrested altar boys who were among the protesters gathering at the church to rally against President Joseph Kabila. The French press agency reports that an officer and a youth in the suburbs of Kinshasa were also killed. The DRC has been marred in a political crisis of Kabila's refusal to step down from power. His second and last term as president ended in December 2016. The UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres warns that the world is likely to face many complex and new dangers in 2018. In a year-end message, Guterres appealed for greater unity to overcome these threats and create a more peaceful world. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the UN's European headquarters in Geneva.
When UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres assumed office 1 year ago, the world was in the midst of a hopeful moment. Negotiations to end more than four decades of division on the island of Cyprus appeared to be moving toward a successful resolution. Guterres jumped into the fray and worked tirelessly to produce that outcome. Unfortunately, the Greek and Turkish Cypriots were unable to bury their differences and live as one nation together. The UN chief acknowledges his hopes for a peaceful 2017 have not materialized. Unfortunately, he says, the world in many ways has gone in reverse. Reflecting this darkened mood on the eve of the new year, Guterres says he is issuing what he calls a red alert for our world.
Conflicts have deepened and new dangers have emerged. Global anxieties about nuclear weapons are the highest since the Cold War. And climate change is moving faster than we are. Inequalities are growing, and we see horrific violations of human rights. Nationalism and xenophobia are on the rise, and as we begin 2018, I call for unity.
During this past year, Guterres has had many catastrophic events landing on his desk, begging for resolution. These include Yemen, the world's worst humanitarian crisis, with some 8 million people on the brink of famine and 1 million infected with cholera. Persecution and violence in Myanmar that forced more than 650,000 Rohingya refugees to flee for their lives to neighboring Bangladesh. Syria, approaching its seventh year of civil war, which has killed hundreds of thousands of people and displaced more than 11 million. Conflicts in South Sudan, Democratic Republic of Congo, Afghanistan, Iraq, and many others that continue to take a heavy toll in lives and property. As the world's leading diplomat, Guterres must retain a sense of optimism that things can get better. He says the world can be made safer and more secure. Conflicts and hatred can be overcome. But only, he adds, if world leaders unite to bridge divides and bring people together around common goals. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Still with the UN, according to a recent report commissioned by the UN, migration is on the rise. There are now an estimated 258 million people living in a country other than their country of birth. This has increased by almost half since the year 2000, the report says. Earlier this month, 60 migrants returned from Libya to Sierra Leone with help from the International Organization for Migration, OIOM. Migrants from Kuwait were also returned earlier this year. Nina DeVries has more on what their experience was like. She reports from Freetown, Sierra Leone.
Mariama Doe is one of hundreds of migrants who came back to Sierra Leone this year. She's relishing her freedom after having spent 10 months in Kuwait. At first, she thought she was going to work as a security guard. When she got there, she was sold as a housekeeper through an agency to several families.
I was not happy in Kuwait. Always I can cry. Every day I can cry when I remember home. And I remember my two kids. I can cry every day, every day.
She says she only got paid once the entire time she was there and was forced to work almost 24 hours a day. When she got sick, there was no sympathy.
I don't have choice. They will say, go and work. You are here for this work. You don't have to sit down. You don't have to rest. We'll buy you for this job. You have to work.
She managed to escape while the family was out one day. Through the help of a stranger on the streets of Kuwait, she was directed to the International Organization for Migration. After several months in a shelter, she was brought back to Sierra Leone with the IOM's assistance. It helped her reintegrate into society by providing financial compensation to set up a business. She now sells clothes and says it's enough to keep her going. Abuse of migrants is happening in many places. Most recently in Libya, there were allegations of migrants being sold in slave markets. About 60 migrants were brought back through the IOM and the Sierra Leone government in mid-December and another group in late November. Umaru Berry is one of the migrants who just returned from Libya. He left Sierra Leone because he was jobless and homeless.
When my little money finish, I don't have place to stay. So sometimes I sleep in the beach. Sometimes I sleep in the ghettos with boys.
Most migrants use Libya as a gateway to Europe. The United Nations estimates about 700,000 migrants are in Libya. Barry says he wanted to stay in Libya, but he soon realized life was not any better. He also describes not always getting paid for work, and his wife, who he met in Libya, often had payments withheld. They eventually managed to get in touch with the IOM in Libya and started the process to be repatriated to Sierra Leone. Barry, his wife, and their son arrived in the early morning hours of December 14th on a chartered flight. It was bittersweet.
I don't have money, but I'm too okay for my life and my family.
The IOM will also compensate Barry, and he's hoping to start up a business. For now, he's staying with his brother. And although it's tough starting over yet again, he's grateful to be out of Libya and back in his country. Nina DeVries, VOA News, Freetown, Sierra Leone.
Reports show that in 2017, the United States escalated drone strikes against Al-Shabaab militants in Somalia, carrying out more than 30 strikes. That is more than twice the number of strikes in the year before. Earlier this year, U.S. President Donald Trump declared parts of Somalia a war zone and increased the number of U.S. military advisors in Somalia to around 500, according to U.S. defense sources. Analysts are now asking if this is the right strategy. And former Somali Defense Minister Abdihakim Mohamud Fiki tells VOA's Harun Maruf that increased attacks against Al-Shabaab is a good strategy, but cautions it may not completely eliminate Al-Shabaab without rebuilding the Somali National Army.
I believe this will help the AMISOM and the Somali government in the fight against Al-Shabaab. And the U.S. has increased, as we know, this year, 2017, more than 100% the drone strikes on Al-Shabaab in the area of the safe haven in Somalia, southern Somalia especially. And I believe that this will help, but this will not eliminate Al-Shabaab totally. And it will need, in order to finish Al-Shabaab and eliminate in the areas that they still rule, to help and rebuild the Somali National Army and arm them and providing them with logistical support they need and the military equipment also they need.
Also this year, the strikes have targeted ordinary militias. In the past, U.S. strikes mainly targeted al-Shabaab leaders. What is the reason for the change of this tactic?
The reason is the change of policy in the U.S. With President Trump, and the Pentagon requested be given the flexibility and the authority to take the action against al-Shabaab, especially to help the AMISOM and the Somali National Army, those are fighting against al-Shabaab. So they were given, you know, the authority and the permission to decide the wherever they want and whenever they want. So this is the change of policy in the U.S. government, and also they empowered, you know, the American commanders in the field that to take the actions against al-Shabaab. So before, it used to be like to take those drone strikes used to decide in the White House by the president. But now the decision goes all the way down to the field commander.
That was former Somali Defense Minister Abdi Hakim Mohamed Fiki. He was speaking to VOA Somali Service reporter Harun Maruf. In Burundi, unmarried couples have until the end of this year to legalize their relationships through the church or state registrations. Those who don't follow this new rule will be penalized. Moses Havyarimana reports from Burundi's capital, Bujumbura.
The new law on married couples in Burundi requires them to register themselves in order to be recognized by the government. Cohabiting couples in Burundi had until the end of 2017 to legalize their marriage or face penalties. The new law was signed by Burundi President Pierre Nkurunziza, which is said to be fighting against gender-based violence and to control the rapidly increasing population in the country. Burundi President Pierre Nkurunziza said that it is a law that will help the country's development projects. He says, now those who didn't respect the time frame that was given, the law will be enforced. He says that because now every Burundian family needs to be legally recognized and will be protected by the government. Muslims in Burundi are critical to the new law, which they say to be undermining the Quran, the Muslim holy book, since Muslims are allowed to marry up to four wives. According to the Muslim law and the Quran, a man can be able to marry three wives or four wives. Sheikh Zuberi Mutembo is a Muslim cleric. He says that the issue of thinking that those with the two wives to only choose one to be registered is not democracy. Zuberi says that it is like they are slaves and are no longer citizens, and that the government should look on how to tackle issues without interfering with the citizens' faith. Ali Bigrimana is a Burundian citizen. He says that the government should first consult with the religious leaders.
You know, the government at some time have to look for ways at least to see how they can handle that case when we turn to Islam. You know, Muslims today have more than two wives.
Alice Mucho is a Burundian citizen.
The idea is not that bad, but the period which was given to the population was too short. And I think the government just wants to encourage people to live together in a legal way. Only the law can protect kids and families.
Burundi is regarded as a secular state, but the new law on marriage have raised concerns within the community. According to the law, a person will be punished from 1 month to 3 months and a fine of $60 to $200 if they fail to legalize their marriage. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
And as we begin this new year, 2018, Africans around the continent are expressing both a sense of cautious optimism and frustration. Many say they are hopeful for the future of their countries. They're also frustrated with what they say are leaders around the continent who refuse to relinquish power when their time is up. From Kampala, Mugume Davis Rwakarenji spoke to a number of Ugandans on the streets.
My name is Ancestry Godfrey, a resident of Kawari Municipality. My hope is African leaders to accept willingly to leave power, willingly to leave power. Two, next year, people to work hard to improve their income, their household income.
My name is Nabatha Queen, so I expect to be like, I am full of blessings and getting more work to do. Then as we are serving the road, I think, and being healthy at that. Getting like, you're not sick, getting strength, like I'm a teacher, so I expect to be being in class 24 hours and deliver the services to the students of the nation. So, and whatever I teach, they should grasp it.
My name is Rogers Riondo. I manage one radio station around. Dreams for 2018, very enthusiastic and expectant. Whatever I've not achieved 2017, I hope to achieve, especially in terms of investment, business. I had a lot of strategies I laid down, and I'm looking at implementation effective 3rd January 2018. And all this, I have to consider the goals I've set, the aims based on the vision. Personally, I'm so much into agriculture. I've already started preparing my land for the next season, which is starting in February. So I'm from the field right now. I've been on garden with the workers. We've set the gardens. I'm purchasing seeds for Irish, and I deal in Irish, and I'm also investing in watermelon. So I'm looking ahead a lot to do in the area of agriculture, but basically to feed and satisfy the needs of our community. The land is so fertile, but production is low, and yet the demand is high. So having discovered the problem, which seems to be lack of food supply, I decided to venture into that, not to earn a living, but satisfy people's needs in the area of food security. Contribute on food security and earn on our GDP as a nation, I have to work hard to achieve that.
Listeners in Uganda express their hopes for the African continent for the year 2018. In Malawi, traffic authorities have stepped up measures to curb road accidents, which continue to kill many people in the country. Police reports show that about 1,300 die in road accidents every year, one of the highest rates in Southern Africa. Previous measures to reduce road carnage faced resistance from road users. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Recent statistics from the Directorate of Road Traffic and Safety Services show that nearly 2,000 people have died in 694 fatal road accidents this year alone. This is double the number of people who died in nearly 100 fatal accidents that happened last year. Malawi Police Service spokesperson James Kadadzera says most accidents were avoidable.
In fact, it's on record that most of the fatal road accidents that we have experienced in 2017 were as a result of overspeeding and drinking and driving.
But some road users say the accidents are on increase, largely because of the country's poor road network. Benson Chiwaka is an operations manager for AXA Bus Company in Malawi.
They're not wide enough. They're getting smaller and smaller when they're eaten up by the rains. So the roads, they need to be worked on as well.
But statistics from the Ministry of Transport show that 80% of accidents are caused by human error, and a few accidents are caused by poor road network. Police spokesperson Kadadzela says the police have introduced new measures to reduce the accidents.
Whoever will be found overspeeding on our road, whoever will be found drinking and driving, we will not give them sport fines, but we will take them straight to court for tougher punishment.
However, other efforts to control road accidents have recently faced resistance from motorists. In June this year, police used tear gas to disperse protesters who touched two police stations in Blantyre. The irate demonstrators were protesting against the new traffic regulations, which, among others, banned passenger buses from operating after 10 p.m. The regulations also proposed a 10-year jail sentence for drivers and conductors of buses that carry standing passengers. And in November, the Directorate of Road Traffic and Safety Services had almost quadrupled the amount of fine and fees for different road traffic offences as a measure to curb road carnage. But the Minister of Transport suspended the fees a week later, following public outcry. Until now, the new fees and fines remain suspended. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
And it's time for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Nigeria. Good morning to you, Samson, and a happy new year.
Good Monday morning to you, Jackson, and a happy new year to you. We begin the first edition of Daybreak Sports for the year by taking a sneak peek into the schedule of Africa's sports highlights for 2018. I asked Jeru Udo and Deji Ogeimbo, both sports analysts, to tell me what their sports expectations are in 2018, a year that also happens to be a football World Cup year.
The World Cup is the biggest one, and we have five teams in Africa, the five best teams in Africa. They'll be participating in the World Cup. I want to see a situation where Africa should be able to produce at least two quarterfinalists in the World Cup. It's not beyond Africa. If we plan very well, we can do it. So I'm expecting to see an Africa team reaching the last four in the World Cup. If Asia can produce South Korea that reached the last four in 2002, then Africa should be able to produce the same. Like, we are going to be having the World Basketball Championship for female and even the male. We also expect to see Africa doing very well in this competition. The Diamond Leagues and other international competitions, the Commonwealth Games that is coming up. Also, we want to see a situation where Africa will properly represented in that competition. So I expect a 2018 where Africa will shine brightly in all international competitions.
Starting with the biggest sports in Africa, football, obviously an African team will be looking to go past that hurdle of quarterfinal. The Ghanaians and the Cameroonians and the Senegalese still remains the only team to have done that. So a semi-final is on the cards. People are tipping the Super Eagles of Nigeria to do it. So the Moroccans, I'm impressed with them under Avi Renard. I think they can also go far at the World Cup. Aside from football, the Confederation of African Athletics that will take place in Nigeria, Akowa and Delta State in August, from August 1st to 5th. That's under High Point for Athletics. I'm expecting the South Africans to come through, the Kenyans to come through, probably Nigeria to almost like top the medals table. And for basketball, the World Cup will take place. African contingents are there, Nigeria holding this way, both for the male and female too. We've got fantastic players playing their trade in the NBA and also the WNBA too, and that's the pinnacle for basketball, so you expect them to come through.
The Confederation of African Football have set aside a new date to inspect Cameroon's state of readiness regarding the 2019 African Cup of Nations. The football governing body has appointed an inspection team that will visit Cameroon for 12 days from January 11th to the 23rd to assess the country's progress as it prepares to host the 2019 African Cup of Nations. The delegation will inspect facilities such as stadium and hotels in host cities towards the successful organization of the 32nd edition of the biennial tournament scheduled for June and July 2019. Ismaili have named Abu Talib El Isawi as the new coach of the first football team, replacing Frenchman Sebastien Desabre, the Egyptian Premier League leaders announced late on Sunday. Desabre, who turned Ismaili's fortunes around following his arrival in the summer, stepped down last week to take charge of the Ugandan national football team. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sport for the 1st of January 2018. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, Jackson, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day, my friend. And that's it for this Monday, January 1st edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a very happy and prosperous New Year 2018, Africa.
Music time in Africa. Savor the flavor of African music. Hi, I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in feast your ears and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Friday at 0900 and Saturday and Sunday at 0900, 15, 20, and 2200 hours UTC.